Hello, lovelies. I'm Valeria, and this is Have Murder, Will Travel. Hey, everyone. Another week, another episode. Hopefully you enjoyed our twisty-turny jaunt to Guatemala. This week, we're going to the other side of the Atlantic. We're going to Ireland! We are going to be discussing two murderous shit-givens named Jeffrey Evans and John Shaw. They were British, and they went to Ireland with the plan to, quote, rape and kill one woman a week. Cool. It's a great plan. Love that. Our story is going to start when these two met. Their friendship started the way most friendships start, in prison. They were both in prison in England for burglary. I swear, I know, talking's hard. I swear I know how to do it. Anyway, they're both in prison for stealing shit. They had dozens of burglary charges. I cannot say that word today. Burglary charges between the two of them. Dozens of them. They're just thieves. Assholes. John Shaw, he had been married, but was divorced. Good on his wife for getting the fuck away from this shitbag. He was illiterate, and he had been committing burglaries since he was 14. You know, some teenagers play sports. Some are into, you know, art or something. He's just into stealing shit. Okay. Cool, cool, cool. Jeffrey had also been married. He actually had 3 kids. But he too was divorced. And I'm sure just like John's wife, Jeffrey's wife was probably like, yeah, you're creepy and gross. And that's probably why they got divorced. Not sure, but as a woman, I'm like, that's why they're divorced. It's fine. So they bond over their burglary charges or what the fuck ever. Both of them were also linked to sexual assaults and rapes, including the rape of a 16-year-old girl. John had actually already been convicted for attempted rape of a young boy. So they just have all these commonalities. I mean, this seems like the basis for a solid friendship right here. So they're in prison comparing rap sheets or dick sizes or whatever the fuck they do. And they decide they should go on a little fun friend road trip after they get out. Oh, doesn't that sound like fun? Just you and your friend in the car driving. And where are they going to go on this trip? Their little road trip is going to involve them going to Ireland and abducting, raping, and killing women together. You know, regular boys trip. They were smart, too. They figure if they went to Ireland, the English police wouldn't be able to pin any more crimes on them in England. Because you're going to hear the English police do want them for some other shit. But they're in Ireland, so the English police just can't get them. So they get out of prison. They've planned this jaunty little road trip. And they arrive in Ireland in 1974. And when they arrived, John Shaw was 31 years old. Jeffrey Evans was 32 years old. So they get to Ireland, and they're like, okay, road trip. We're going to be abducting, raping, and killing. First things first. We need some money, because, you know, torturing women is expensive. So you think they got jobs or earned money in an honest way? Of course not. They broke into a bunch of homes to make money, because, you know, jobs are overrated. Why would you get one of those? On February 5th, 1975, they actually appeared in Cork Circuit Court on 16 counts of burglary. 16 burglaries. Why am I having trouble with that word? 16 burglaries in less than a year? That's impressive. I mean, impressive in like a really messed up way. That's not cool, but wow, 16. They're busy. So they were both sentenced to 2 years for these burglaries. Neither of them served their full sentence because of course they fucking didn't. So in August of 1976, they appeared in a court in Dublin. Now remember, they were like, oh, we go to Ireland, the English police won't be able to get us. Yeah, that's exactly what the police were trying to do. British authorities wanted them because they were now linked to all those rapes and sexual assaults I mentioned. Yeah, the cops had enough evidence. They were like, yeah, we need to arrest them. Well, they were released on £40 bond and given a month to prepare a case as to why they shouldn't be extradited out of Ireland. Now, I've never been to Ireland court. I've actually never been to Ireland at all, but definitely not in court. My number one rule when I go to a foreign country is don't get arrested. But I've never heard of such a thing. It just seems like BS. Why are they giving them a month to plead to not be extradited? Like, what is stopping them from just not showing up in a month? And what are they supposed to say? Don't extradite me because I don't want to go to jail. Seems like BS. Seems like it wouldn't work at all. And you're going to see it doesn't. Now, when Jeffrey and John had been in prison here in Ireland, for all those burglaries they committed, they'd made another friend. These dudes, so friendly, just making friends everywhere they go. How sweet. This friend's name was Cliff Outram. So when the two boys, I don't know why I call them boys, they're assholes, when Jeffrey and John get out on their £40 bond, they head straight over to Cliff's house. Because, where else are they supposed to go? Now, Cliff had a car, a gray Austin 40. They asked if they could borrow his car, and he was like, yeah, sure. This is one part of these cases that I never really understand. All these criminals, they always just be borrowing cars from people, which is so weird to me. I don't just let people borrow my car. If someone wants to borrow your car, make sure they're not borrowing your car for crime. Because guess what these guys were borrowing the car for? Yeah, for crime. Because remember, they'd made that pact in prison back in England. They were going to kill a woman a week. Shit, they've already been in Ireland almost 2 years and they haven't killed anybody yet. This is not going well. They got to do it. They got to get this pact going. So they take the car from Cliff and they drive up north. This brings us to Elizabeth Plunkett. I just want to say that I love saying her name. I don't know why. Plunkett just sounds cute to me. Elizabeth Plunkett was 23 years old. She was one of eight children, a lot of fucking children, four brothers, three sisters. She lived in Dublin. She worked at a printing firm as a currency clerk. She was very pretty, vivacious. She was confident. Apparently, she liked to swim. She liked to hike. She practiced judo. She liked to camp. She liked to just be outside. Like, she's just a cool, active chick. Okay. She's just living her life. I love it. She did have a boyfriend. His name was Damien Bush. He was a mechanic. They'd have been together 5 months at this point. And the way they met was she was actually friends with his sister, and his sister's the one that had introduced them. So on August 28th, 1976, the couple made plans to go to Staunton's Caravan Park with five other friends. It'd been a really hot summer, like everyone was dying, they're melting, just like I am right now. And so they were like, we're gonna go up to the caravan park, which is basically, it's like a place for RVs, campers. They're gonna go there, just gonna camp, hang, have a good time. Sounds like fun. I mean, not to me, because I don't camp. Ugh. But great for them. Sounds like a lot of fun, especially given that this is kind of the shit she likes to do. The caravan park was located in British Bay, so they got there and they decided to go to a pub. They went to McDaniel's Pub because, they just travel there. They get there, they're like, we need to hang out and get a drink. Now, this pub, I always think of pubs as being like small bars. I don't know what the difference really between a pub and a bar is. But I always picture pubs being kind of small, hole-in-the-wall type places. This pub could hold up to 800 people. To me, that's like a fucking amphitheater. That's not a pub, but okay. So they went to McDaniel's Pub, this big-ass pub, and Elizabeth was wearing white pants, a navy shirt that said Saint-Tropez on it, wedge sandals, and a watch she had received for her 21st birthday. The Saint-Tropez shirt, she'd actually just been on vacation with her boyfriend's sister to Saint-Tropez. She'd saved up for that trip for a really long time. I'm like, oh, this is so sad. She never gets to go on any other vacations. So anyway, they're all hanging out, there's like seven of them hanging out, having a great time. And then Damien and their other friend, Joe McCoy, they get into a bit of an argument about a car sale. You know, friends do get into a little bit of a argument. Everyone ignored him at first, but they kept arguing. Elizabeth tried to get him to stop, and they didn't listen to her. They were like, no, we're arguing, leave us alone. And I mean, we've all been there, right? You're out with somebody, maybe your boyfriend, girlfriend, or even just some friends. They start arguing, and you're like, hey, shut the fuck up. And they didn't. So Elizabeth was like, all right, well, I'm not going to sit here and listen to this. Fuck this. I'm leaving. So she goes. Not that weird. It wasn't like a big fight. It was just like, I'm not going to sit here and listen to you argue. I'm going to go back to the caravan park. She was seen leaving the pub around 11 p.m. She was also spotted about 5 minutes later walking toward the caravan park. Her boyfriend later said, quote, Liz came over and told us we came down for a good weekend and should not be fighting. I just told her to mind her own business and she left. She went out. He said that was the last time he ever saw her. This poor guy, that was the last thing he said to her. Mind your own business. I bet he feels terrible. But I mean, it's not, he shouldn't. He didn't do anything wrong. We've all told people that before. Hey, mind your own business. Go away. You know, it doesn't mean anything. Unfortunately for Elizabeth, Jeffrey and John had been driving up that night. They stopped along the way to pick up a suitcase that Jeffrey had stored in a locker at a train station. And they knew this area really well because they'd committed a lot of burglaries up there. I mean, that's how I always learn a new area. You know, I don't check out restaurants or shops. I just rob houses. Perfect way to get to know a place. John later told the police, quote, we have been talking about girls, and Jeff said he was going to pick up a bird and have it off of her. He wanted a small bird. Now, if you're not hip with the slang, a bird is like a woman, like a girl. So basically, he's saying he's going to pick up a chick, wants her to be small, and basically, he's going to have sex with her. And I don't think he means like, I want to pick up a prostitute or I want to pick up a one-night stand. This seems very ominous. He's like, I'm going to pick up a chick. I'm going to rape her. He just didn't come right out and say that. So they see Elizabeth leaving the pub alone, and immediately they're like, that's it. She's the one. Now, they had planned this all out. You know, remember, they made this pact in prison in England years ago. So they've got this all planned out. So Jeffrey gets out of the car. And John keeps driving because they figured one man alone would seem less threatening. Like they planned this out. They're like, no woman's going to get in the car if both of us are in it. But if just one of us is in it, we'll seem more innocuous. Maybe they'll get in. Like that's super fucked up that they're planning it to that extent. I don't like any of this, but I especially don't like that. Ugh. A witness driving by later said that they saw a woman wearing white pants and a blue shirt walking away from the pub. Then they saw her get in a car that had been driving slowly the opposite direction. The witness said they stopped a little further up the road and commented to their passenger that it seemed strange and maybe they should go back. And their passenger was just like, no, it wasn't weird. Let's go. Which, again, they didn't really do anything wrong. They saw her getting into a car. It looked a little weird, but she wasn't drug in or anything, so I'm not blaming any of these people except John and Jeffrey because they're disgusting, murdering assholes. I'm just saying that poor witness, and especially his passenger, who was like, ah, don't worry about it, it's fine. I bet they feel so guilty too. They're probably like, oh, we probably should have gone back. So she gets in the car because John was like, hey, want to ride back to Dublin? And she was like, okay. He seemed like a normal guy who was by himself. She's like, sure, yeah, actually, I will take a ride. She gets in the car, car goes up a little bit, and Jeffrey gets in the back seat. Now, John and Jeffrey both said that's when she started to get nervous. She was like, what the fuck? I mean, can you imagine? First of all, don't get in cars with strangers ever. But if you do, you're like, okay, this one person, they're gonna give me a ride. And then all of a sudden they stop and another person gets in. You'd be like, is this planned? Clearly you know each other. I don't like it. I'm nervous. Yikes. Now, they both said that once they were both in the car, they started, quote, messing with her. I don't know what they mean by that. I'm sure it's nothing nice, nothing fun. I don't want to think about it too hard because it'll make me vomit. About a mile away, so they drive about a mile with her, just messing with her, as they call it. I feel like they were probably like trying to grope her, maybe, or saying nasty stuff. I don't really know. So they drive about a mile and they stop at the entrance to a plantation. This is when they made her get out of the car, and they said they made her get out of the car and she was scared and she begged them to let her go. Like, begged them. But instead, they beat her. Then they pulled off her pants and underwear, and John raped her. After he raped her, John left to go move the car. Because, you know, they can't just have it at the entrance to the plantation. They've planned this all out. Can you imagine, like, not imagine raping somebody, but like, you've just done this horrible deed, horrible, sickening thing, and then you're just like, all right, I gotta go move the car. Like, that's disgusting. How casual. Like, it made no impression on these fuckers. So while he's gone, Elizabeth asked Jeffrey what they were gonna do to her. And you know what Jeffrey said? He told her, we'll probably let you go. He said that knowing damn good and well they weren't gonna let her go. Because remember, their plan was to kill a woman a week. So they had no intention of letting her go. And I don't know why that bugs me so much. I mean, everything they're doing is disgusting and sickening. But I don't know. I almost would prefer if they were just like honest with her or didn't answer her. But the fact that they're like, oh yeah, we're probably gonna let you go, that super grosses me out. I think it's because they're like giving her this false sense of hope. And I don't like that because I can almost feel it in my chest, her being like, oh, okay, I just need to survive this for a little bit and then they're gonna let me go. And of course, that's not what they were planning on doing at all. So he tells her that they'll probably let her go. But right after he tells her that, then he raped her too. So I don't even get this. Like, he's trying to be a nice guy, like, oh, don't worry, we'll probably let you go. But hold on, I'm gonna rape you first. So John parked the car at a different pub, Jack White's pub, and then he walked back. Now, when John got back, this is where things get even worse for poor Elizabeth. John and Jeffrey took turns raping her for hours, just one right after the other. I don't want to think about that. That's horrendous. This poor girl. I hope these two rot or die. I don't even know. There's words cannot express the things that I hope happen to these pieces of human garbage. And after they had raped her for hours, they just laid down on either side of her so she couldn't get away. Can you imagine this? They've brutally tormented this girl for hours, and they just lay on either side of her like it's a cuddle sesh. This poor girl. I can't. It just, ugh. I feel so. This one really bothers me. So early the next morning, Jeffrey walks back to get the car, but when he got to the car, it wouldn't start. So he just fell asleep in the car. While they've got a girl they are torturing in the woods, this psycho's just taking a fucking nap. Now, just like John earlier, when he's like, gotta go move the car, this just shows you that neither of these assholes were bothered by what they did. It was just like, okay, I'm doing this. Just like no different than running some errands. I went to the bank, I kidnapped a girl, I went to the grocery store, like, just casual for them. Disgusting. A witness actually saw him asleep in the car around 1:45 p.m. So he just straight up slept all day. And we can only imagine what John was doing to poor Elizabeth in the woods that whole time. This witness that saw him sleeping in the car actually helped him push the car to get it going. Can you imagine being that witness? Like, there's so many people in this case that saw them at different times, but it's like they weren't acting creepy or weird when these people saw them. Like this person outside the pub, this person, Jeffrey's like, "Hey, my car won't start. Can you help me push it?" They were just like, "Hey, yeah, man, no problem." No idea that they used that car to kidnap a poor woman. So Jeffrey drove back to the woods, and when he got there, he said John was waiting near the entrance and he seemed upset. Now, John told Jeffrey the girl was dead. John said that while he was laying there next to Elizabeth, he had fallen asleep. And that's when Elizabeth tried to escape. Yes, girl, get out of there. Unfortunately, John chased her down. He said she wouldn't stop screaming. I say, good for her. And now she's screaming, so he obviously had no choice but to strangle her. He actually strangled her with one of Jeffrey's shirts out of that suitcase they had picked up. So they just leave Elizabeth's body there, along with the suitcase, and they just leave. Just drive off, because they're like, better figure out what we're gonna do. Which is so weird to me because they planned this whole thing out. I can't believe they didn't plan what to do with the bodies. That not very good planners, okay? I almost want to be like, let me give you some tips from a highly organized person. But then I'm like, oh yeah, no, you fucking suck. So they agree that they should probably dump her body in the sea. But before they did that, they were like, we should probably go rob some more caravans because, we need some more shit and we can't bury her body till nighttime. So while her dead body is out in the woods with Jeffrey's suitcase, they break into a bunch of caravans and they stole some sleeping bags, they stole a tent, they stole a TV, they stole money. Just, casual day out, like they didn't just murder somebody. Then they just waited till nighttime because they figured that was best time to get rid of the body. When Elizabeth left the pub, her boyfriend and her friends actually came out 15 minutes after her. So they come out 15 minutes after her, go back to the caravan park. She's not there. That's when they're like, this isn't good. Is she, wonder where she is? So they searched for her all night. They searched for her all night. They searched into the morning. They were searching on foot. Then they got in their cars. They're driving around. They're searching around the pub. They're searching around the caravan park. They're searching everywhere. They're just searching while John and Jeffrey are just torturing her in the woods. Her friends and her boyfriend are just out searching for her. That's horrible. So they returned to the body after midnight on August 29th, which this is so crazy to me. They just left her body there most of the day. That is bold as fuck to me. Because yes, nobody found it, but anybody could have found her body with the fucking suitcase. That's just bold. I feel like you're supposed to get rid of the body right away. Not that I've ever killed somebody, but I just. That's crazy. So they return, her body's still there. They put her in the trunk of the car while they'd been out stealing, having their little day of fun. They'd noticed a couple boats padlocked together by the water. So they decide to steal one. They steal a boat called the Skipper. They also broke into the shed at the boathouse and they stole some oars, a lawnmower, and clothesline. They stripped Elizabeth naked and tied her to the lawnmower. Then they rowed out to sea and they dumped her body overboard. They left the boat at the shore, right where they left it, right where they found it, excuse me, and then they went back to the woods. Again, the balls on these assholes. They just left her there all day. Now they're returning to the crime scene again. How many times are you gonna go back? What dumb fucks? I don't get it. Don't get it. So they return to the woods They grab Jeffrey's suitcase, her shoes, and her sandals. This left them there in the woods, and they tossed her special watch in the bushes. The next morning, they're at this caravan park, McDaniel's Caravan Park, and they're just burning her clothes in a fire pit. A cop actually saw them doing this in the morning, and he was like, seems a little weird. So he asked them what they were doing. They told him their names were John and Jeffrey Murphy and said they were on a holiday. Now, sure, what they were doing was kind of weird, but it wasn't criminal, so the cop had to leave them alone. You know, he's like, okay, sure, weird, but all right. Over the next few days, they said her friends, her family, they're all searching. The cops are searching for her. They find her bra in the bushes. It was actually the friend, Joe McCoy, who'd been arguing with the boyfriend. He's actually the one that found it in the bushes. They found her sandals. They found her watch. Like I said, it was people that knew her finding these things. Not that I would want anybody to find a missing person's items, but I feel like it's worse that it's people she knew. Like, ugh, somebody I know goes missing. I don't want to find their bra in a bush. That just sounds terrible. Now, in the woods, they also found a label, G. Murphy. It had fallen off Jeffrey's suitcase. Like, I don't even understand why they brought this suitcase to the crime scene. I really don't. Like, you're fucking dumb. And once that name Murphy got out, the cop that saw them burning the clothes came forward. Because remember, they told the cop their names were John and Jeffrey Murphy. So this cop's like, yeah, I saw somebody who told me that was their name. They were burning up clothes the very next morning. Well, this cop gave them a whole description of the two of them. Because, you know, he talked to him. And he was like, oh yeah, also they're British. Because, you know, this is Ireland. So they're kind of sticking out. So now the cops are like, cool. We're looking for two British guys. And they have a full description of what they look like. So far, they're a little packed. Does not seem like it's going very well for how long they planned it. So meanwhile, Jeffrey and John, after they dumped Elizabeth's body, they just went back to Cliff's house. Just drove back. They were like, oh yeah, man, here's your car back. We didn't commit any crimes in it. Wink, wink. And then, of course, they just continued to perform a number of home burglaries. Because, you know, they needed money for their next murder. Remember, one a week. They also stole some license plates off an abandoned car. These two, I don't know if this is just how cunning they were, or if this is like, we can make fun of the Irish government here, but these fools were actually granted driver's licenses under fake names. John's driver's license was under the name David Ball, and Jeffrey was under the name Ray Hall. First of all, I just wonder if they rhymed on purpose. Like, we're cute. And I'm like, yeah, fuck off. Don't like that at all. But also, I don't understand how that works. Like, when I went to get a license, I feel like I had to bring a fuck ton of paperwork to prove who I was. Like, I think I had to take a birth certificate or a copy, social security card. Like, and these two dumb fucks are just like, oh yeah, here's my name. And they were like, oh, that sounds good. Have a driver's license. I don't understand that at all, but okay. So on Friday, September 10th, they were supposed to appear in court in Dublin to explain why they shouldn't be extradited to England. Because remember, they're out on bond right now. They don't give a fuck. They're out on a 40-pound bond. They're supposed to be convincing England not to extradite them. I remember how I said I don't think that would work? Yeah, guess what? It fucking didn't, because they didn't go to court. To be fair, if I knew I was wanted for an extraditable offense, I wouldn't show up either. I'd be like, no thank you. I'm out here having fun. Hopefully I wouldn't be having their kind of fun, but you know, I'm just saying, not surprised they didn't show up. So instead of going to court like they were supposed to, they made their way to Galway because they decided they needed a base of operations and it couldn't be Cliff's house anymore. Not sure why. I don't know if they got into some kind of argument with Cliff, or maybe Cliff started to notice they were robbing too much. And remember, Cliff had been in jail with them, so maybe Cliff actually was reformed or on some kind of parole. Maybe he was like, you can't do that near my house. I don't know. They left Cliff's house, went to Galway to set up their little base of operations. On September 14th, they bought a caravan using the fake names on their licenses. So David Ball and Ray Hall, hate those fucking names. So sorry if that's your actual name, but as far as these two are concerned, I fucking hate it. So they buy the caravan, and it's important to note that the caravan, like all the other caravans in this caravan park, was propped up on concrete blocks. Keep that in mind for later. There's tons of concrete blocks that they easily have access to. Now, the man who ran the caravan park and sold them the caravan said that when they showed up, they didn't seem to have a car, but then a few days later they did. Cool. Maybe they bought a car. Yeah, no. The car was a green Cortina, and Jeffrey had actually stolen it in Clifton. Again, they've planned this all out, so they're smarter than the cops. They bought black paint and they did a really shitty, sloppy repainting job. Like, you're gonna hear later in the story, people could look at the car and be like, okay, so that's been painted over. That's why you don't paint your car yourself. I mean, I'm glad these two suck, but just dumb. For all the time they spent planning this, you'd think it'd go better. And then, of course, remember they stole some plates before they put those on the car. They also stole a roof rack from a car and put it on this car. I'm not sure why they did that, but they did, and a witness ID'd it later. To me, that's just why they shouldn't have stolen one, because it just makes your car more identifiable. But they're so smart, they've planned it all out. These two are actually really fucking dumb. So they've got their base of operations, they've got their car, they got money because they've been, burglarizing. They're like, okay, we're ready. Time to get us another gal. And this brings us to Mary Duffy. Mary, like Elizabeth, was 23 years old. She was one of seven kids. So Elizabeth was one of eight, Mary's one of seven, both coming from big Irish families. Mary still lived at home on the family farm. She actually worked two jobs. I'm like, yes, girl, make that bank. She was a shop assistant during the day, 4 days a week, and then she worked at a coffee shop as a cook 4 nights a week. Now, when she worked at night at the coffee shop, she worked till like 10:30, 11 o'clock. So she was smart. She was not just out here walking around in the dark. No, they said she never went home alone. She would either catch a ride with somebody at the shop or her brother would come and pick her up. And I'm like, that's smart. Like, don't walk home at 11 o'clock at night, Mary. So on Wednesday, September 22nd, Mary finished her shift at 11 p.m. Mary was wearing a red polo, jeans, a red coat, and boots. Sounds like a cute outfit. Elizabeth sounded cute too. I'm just saying. Well-dressed ladies. She was also carrying a brown handbag that contained a red purse with white rosary beads and a plastic cosmetics bag. She also had two gold rings. One had her initials on it, and one was her birthstone. When she got off work, she realized she didn't have any change for the payphone. So a coworker was like, here you go, gave her some change. She called her brother Michael from the nearby payphone. Michael was actually a mechanic. He worked nearby. And when she called, he was actually out helping a customer. So Mary, she left a message with, whoever picked up the phone, another worker or whatever, and was like, hey, I'm going to start walking home. He can meet me at the corner of Breffy Road. And that's where I just want to be like, no, go inside and wait for your ride. Walking may be good for the environment, but walking is for dead people. Don't do it. But of course, she's like, yeah, tell him I'm just going to start heading for the corner. I'll see him there. Unfortunately for Mary, Jeffrey and John were watching her. They saw her make this phone call, and then they saw her walk off alone. So they were like, okay, that's it. That's our next one. Perfect. So they put their plan into action again. John hopped out of the car. Jeffrey parked the car further up the street. This one's a lot different, a little more traumatic, how they grab Mary than Elizabeth. John actually followed behind her, real quiet, and when she got near the parked car, he pounced. Like he just jumped her. Can you imagine that? It's late at night, you're like, oh, I'm gonna walk to the corner and meet my brother. And then somebody out of nowhere just attacks you. Poor Mary, she'd had teeth problems like most of her life, and she'd had a bunch of teeth pulled, and she actually wore a dental plate to replace a fake tooth. When John attacked her, he punched her so hard that the dental plate came out of her mouth and it was left on the road. That seems like a shot in a movie. You know, they always want to be cinematic, and somebody would disappear and you'd see like their fake tooth lying there. But this is not a movie. This is real life. This is awful. What happened to this girl? Now, when he attacked her, she screamed. She screamed real fucking loud while they were forcing her into the back of the car. Like she's screaming, she's putting up a fight. And this was a residential neighborhood, wasn't businesses. She's walking by houses. Several witnesses actually heard her scream. One neighbor said the scream sounded short and hysterical. Another said they heard a man scream, "Come on." Another woman or another neighbor said the woman sounded like she was hurt or someone had hit her. Several neighbors even said they looked outside. One said they saw a Cortina with a roof rack speed away from the area. Little have murder will travel life tip. If you hear panicked screaming and a car speeding away, something's going down and you need to call the cops. This is bystander effect is so fascinating to me. I might do an episode on it one day, even though it's not travel, it's murder related. There's so many cases where people are like, oh yeah, I heard all that noise, but you know, I just figured somebody else was going to call the cops. And it's like, no, you call the cops. And then even if they get 30 calls, at least you know you did your part. That is one part where I'm like, oh my God, somebody call the cops. I don't know if the cops could have caught them or stopped this from happening, but maybe they could have. We'll never know. And this next little part I want to say is really haunting to me. Again, it's kind of like a movie, but like it's just, I can picture it so clearly in my mind and it really fucks me up. So her brother, by this point, he's gotten the message. It hasn't been that long, but he's gotten the message. So he's driving to meet her. And they said it's very likely that he drove past Jeffrey and John going in the opposite direction with his terrified sister in the back. That is chilling to me. Like he thinks he's going to pick her up, everything's fine. And she's being sped off the other direction, scared for her life. Like I said, that's a haunting ass movie scene. So in the back of the car, Mary was tied up by John, and then he hit her repeatedly and raped her. And the whole time, Jeffrey's just driving the car. How do you drive while that is going on in the back? Like, how does that work in your brain? These guys are, they're rancid sacks of horse piss or something equally disgusting. Like, oh, just driving while that's going on in the car. And somewhere along the road, they actually switched drivers. They just pulled over and were like, Chinese fire drill. The fuck? And when Jeffrey got in the back, she supposedly didn't scream. Of course, this is according to them. But she did say, don't do me any harm. That really hurts me. She's already gone through so much at this point, and she's just begging them not to hurt her anymore. Ugh. Of course, Jeffrey did do her harm. He raped her while John was driving. And a forensic scientist later said that the pubic hair from all three of them and seminal fluids from both men were all over the back seat. Ooh. So these disgusting sacks of pus drove throughout the night, and every so often they would pull over and switch drivers. so that the one in the back could rape Mary. All night long. Hours and hours. Switching drivers and raping this poor girl. They drove to Connemara. Hopefully I said that right. Irish listeners, you'll let me know. They drove to a fairly remote area that they had, of course, scoped out in advance. They'd found the area and they were like, oh yeah, bringing our next victim here. So they stop at a derelict train station and they drag Mary out of the car. They strip her naked, drag her into the woods. In the woods, they continue to take turns raping her. Sometime in the early morning, they decided they were tired. I guess tormenting a girl is tiring. And they were tired, so they put Mary's coat on her, because, you know, they're chivalrous. And they tied her to a tree, probably because Elizabeth tried to run. So they're like, we're smarter than that now. Tie her to a tree. And then she's tied to this tree. So then they just pitched their stolen tent next to her and went to sleep. I'm sorry, what? You just tied this poor battered woman to a tree and you're just like, better take a nap. I hope their dicks turn gangrenous and fall off with oozing green pus. That would be lovely. Also, can you imagine being Mary in this moment? They finally stop raping you, so at least that's stopped for now. Then they tie you to a tree. She was probably hoping they were going to tie her there and leave. I mean, that's what I'd be hoping. I'd be like, okay, being left in the woods alone be better than being with them. But then instead, they pitch a tent and go to sleep nearby. She had to know they would continue their torture when they woke up. And I can't even imagine the panic and the fear that she must have been feeling. I can't fathom it. So Jeffrey woke up first. He woke up early and he left for the caravan. He's like, we need food and some supplies. But when he got to the caravan, he realized he was still tired. So he went inside and took another nap. Went inside, napped till noon. This dude just be sleeping wherever and whenever. I wonder if he's got some narcolepsy or something. Again, what really bugs me is the fact that they just sleep after they've done these horrible things. Literally, don't give a shit. Mind is not bothered at all. Like I said, rancid sacks of horse piss. So he finally wakes up, and this is when he grabs one of the concrete blocks that those caravans are propped up on. I told you those were going to come back. Yeah, he grabs one. He also grabbed rope and a bunch of Valium. Then he went into town and he bought some food. You know, just a regular guy out running errands. While Jeffrey's off running errands, John untied Mary and continued to rape her. After their arrest, they took the police to where they had Mary tied up, and John actually pointed out a log. And he claims that at one point, he and Mary were sitting on the log and some fishermen were within earshot fishing in the river. He said he saw them, but Mary didn't, so that's why she didn't scream for help. Of course, who knows if this is true or not, because he's a sack of shit. I don't think it's true. I mean, that'd be such a bummer if help was right there and she didn't notice. But also, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why would they have just been sitting on the log? I don't for one second believe she would have ever stopped trying to get away. Yeah, I don't buy it. People that are disgusting kidnapping rapist murderers, probably not the best source of the truth. So Jeffrey doesn't actually get back from running all his errands until the early evening. And John, you know, was feeling nice. So instead of tying Mary back up to the tree, he'd let her lay down in the tent. She was naked, though. She also had a deep bleeding gash over her left temple, two black eyes, and she's missing more teeth at this point. She also had wounds and scratches all over her body. So clearly, John was not only sexually assaulting her, he was just beating the shit out of her. A state pathologist later said that her bruises were consistent with being forcibly held down. And again, this is another point where I'm like, yeah, don't buy your story that you were sitting on a log and some fishermen were there, because it sounds like she was fighting you the whole time. So I think John just said that to like fuck people up. Like, yeah, somebody could have stopped me, but they didn't. Oh. And I just want to punch his fucking face in. So Jeffrey, he's being a nice guy. He brought Mary a cheese sandwich that he had made for her and some barley water. Yeah, she didn't eat it. She refused to eat or drink anything. Which I don't even understand that. Can you imagine one of your rapists comes back and is like, hey, what a sandwich I made you? It's like, no, I want to go home and be away from you. This is not a date. I'm here against my will. You fucking kidnapped me. What the absolute fuck? Well, I guess Jeffrey was bored with all this, or he didn't like her attitude. I don't know. So he left again. He's like, I gotta go get a drink. So he leaves, and of course, John's like, well, got nothing else to do. So he continued to rape Mary again. Jeffrey didn't come back until the late evening. So at this point, they've been tormenting and raping this girl for over 24 hours. This poor, poor girl. So Jeffrey comes back, and him and John start talking about what they're gonna do with her. Now, I imagine while they're having this conversation, I imagine that Mary could hear them, which I think had to be so unnerving. You can hear them talking. Oh, should we kill her? Maybe they're talking about how they were gonna kill her. I can't even imagine. I feel so bad for her. So around midnight, Jeffrey made Mary take five Valium, and he said she became dozy. It's like, yeah, you think? Five seems like a lot of fucking Valium. I don't think you're supposed to take that many at one time, especially she's kind of a petite gal. Like, I think that makes a difference too. So, yeah, of course she became dozy, dumb sack of shit. And when Jeffrey gave her the Valium, he told her they were going to take her home, which of course was a lie. I almost feel like he gets off on this like little shred of hope he's giving them, because remember he did that to Elizabeth too. He was like, oh, we'll probably let you go. And now he's telling Mary, oh, we're gonna send you home. Like, why? Why is he torturing them like that? So Jeffrey gives her all these Valium, and then he just went and got in the car. So John then used a red tartan cushion from the car and started suffocating her. But I guess that was taking too long, so then he put his hands around her neck and just strangled her. Jeffrey later said that he saw continued movement inside the tent, and a pathologist later testified that there might have been intercourse after death. These guys just keep getting nastier and nastier. Ugh. So after he killed her, John said to Jeffrey, we'll have to do the same as we did in Wicklow, which they were talking about Elizabeth. They mean we'll have to get rid of the body. So they put Mary's body in the trunk, drove to a nearby boathouse. At the boathouse, they stole a sledgehammer, a grappling hook. Then they helped themselves to one of the boats. They took Mary's coat off of her, so she was naked, and they removed her two gold rings. Then they tied the sledgehammer and grappling hook to her body. They tied that concrete block that Jeffrey had picked up to her feet. Then they rowed out into the lake, where John threw her body overboard while Jeffrey balanced the boat. They returned the boat to its original position. They threw her rings in the bushes, where they were later found by police metal detectors. Then they went to Weir Bridge and threw the clothes and sleeping bags over. One little side note that's not super important to the story, but I just think these guys are idiots and I want you to know. When they were confessing, they kept calling the grappling hook an anchor. They literally thought they tied an anchor to her. And everyone was like, yeah, no, you're fucking dumb. This is a grappling hook. Anchor looks completely different and is a little heavier. Like, idiots. It actually took a team of 35 divers from the police, army, navy, civilian volunteers, all that. There were over 35 of them, 2 weeks to find Mary's body. because this was a very vast and deep lake. Her body was eventually found in a crevice by a volunteer diver. Now, after their arrest, John and Jeffrey took the police around, showing them evidence, like it was fucking show and tell or something. And in the woods, the police did find the tent ground sheet. They found the red tartan cushion. And then this next part, I don't like at all. They found a wad of tissues that had been pressed into the shape of someone's mouth. How hard were these animals holding these tissues to her mouth that they molded to her mouth? That is fucked up. I can clearly picture this wad of tissues, and I don't like it at fucking all. And in John and Jeffrey's caravan, the police found the partially burnt remains of her purse and her white rosary beads. I'm not religious at all, but if you burn someone's rosary beads, I'm pretty sure you're going to hell. I mean, these guys are already going there, but still. Now, as soon as Mary was reported missing, because she was reported missing pretty quickly, just like Elizabeth, as soon as Mary was reported missing, the cops were like, pretty sure this is linked to Elizabeth's disappearance and murder. Seems eerily similar. And remember, they have that description of two British guys that they're looking for in regards to Elizabeth's case. So now they're like, great, we're looking for them still. And lucky for us, Mary and Elizabeth's cases were all over the news. Everyone in Ireland knew about this. Everyone was looking for them, looking for these two shady British assholes. Well, the day before they kidnapped Mary, our intrepid duo stopped for gas at a nearby gas station. Remember, this is before the news had come out about Mary and Elizabeth, and hey, we're looking for these British guys. So this owner has no idea about this stuff. But the owner of the station, he still thought the two British dudes were weird. He was like, something seems off. And he could tell just by looking at their car that it had been painted over. Because you know these bumbling idiots did a shit painting job. So it was super fucking obvious. And this owner's name of this gas station was Joseph Keane. We love Joseph Keane, okay? Joseph, again, this was not out on the news yet. Yet Joseph was like, these guys are weird. This car is weird. So he took it upon himself to write down their license plate number. Yes, Joe, Joseph, whatever you go by. Like he's just being an observant guy. Observant. I said that weird. Joe's just being an observant guy who's like, yeah, these two are shady as fuck. So now all this comes out on the news about Mary and these two British guys, and Joseph's like, I knew it. So he called the cops and gave them the license plate number. I'm like, yes, Joseph. Again, we love Joseph Keane, observant ass gas station attendant. Claps to him. So now there's a nationwide search for the car, the two men. They know what plates they're looking for. Like shit is closing in on these fuckers. So you think that means they're stopping? They're on the run or anything? Absolutely not. On Sunday, September 26th, John and Jeffrey were just chilling, drinking in a bar in the Ocean Wave Cafe. You know what they were doing there? Yeah, they were drinking and stuff, but the real reason they were there was to scout more potential victims. Because, like I said, they don't give a fuck that there's a nationwide search for them. They've got a pact. They're supposed to kill a woman a week. Like, they got find number three. Let's go. Luckily for the people of Ireland, a cop spotted the car in the parking lot and was like, oh shit, that's the car on the news. And this cop was also smart in that he didn't go in guns blazing. He called for backup. And so when these two idiots came out of the bar, they were promptly arrested. 2 days later, on Tuesday, September 28th, a local man was out for a morning walk when he came upon a body face down near the shore. It was Elizabeth Plunkett's body, washed up from the sea. John and Jeffrey were both given life in prison for the murders and 14 years for rape. They are Ireland's longest serving prisoners. Too fucking bad. Don't feel bad for them at all. In 2002, John was actually transferred from the high security Arbor Hill prison to a lower security prison called Castlereagh. Again, Irish listeners, let me know if I said that right. John is still in this low security prison to this day. Jeffrey, meanwhile, was also serving his sentence in prison until December 2008. That month, he was transferred to the Mater Hospital for a heart bypass surgery. The surgery, unfortunately, went well, but the next day he had a stroke and slipped into a coma. I sounded a little too pleased when I said that, but I kind of was. He never woke from this coma, and he remained in the coma under round-the-clock hospital care until he died in 2012. His care cost Ireland 900,000 euros a year, and this went on for about three to 4 years. Fuck that. He's in a coma. Let him go. He murdered people. After his death, I like this part. I think it's kind of funny. After his death, no one came forth to claim the body, so he's buried in an unmarked grave. Boo fucking who, right? Now, John Shaw, meanwhile, like I said, he's still chilling out in prison. He's repeatedly applied for full release under parole. Luckily, these requests have always been denied. His parole hearings determined that he still posed a danger to women, which I'm like, yeah, you think? However, this next part made me kind of mad. In 2016, he was granted 2 days outings a year under prison escort, but that decision was rejected by the Minister of Justice. In 2020, he appealed, and the new Minister of Justice said he should get 2 days out a year. Now, if you listened to the Brazil episode, you know I think it's absolute bullshit that these prisoners get temporary releases. He didn't give Elizabeth or Mary a release, so he didn't get one either. That's how I feel. Now, this didn't happen for a little while. There was COVID and just different things were coming up, so he still hadn't gotten his release, and I'm like, good. But in May 2022, so just a few months ago, he was allowed to leave the prison under guard. He went for a walk around Dublin and had a coffee in a cafe. Well, isn't that just fucking great for him? Absolute bullshit. The only good news is he'll probably die in prison just like Jeffrey. In that's the end of the story of Jeffrey Evans and John Shaw, two disgusting cysts on humanity who did end up in prison and did not complete their pact to kill a woman a week, thankfully. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can follow the podcast on Instagram. It's Have Murder, Will Travel. You can find the podcast on Facebook at Have Murder, Will Travel Podcast. You can always send me a nice email at havemurderwilltravel@gmail.com. Tune in next week to see where we travel next. Until then, don't forget to explore the world and stay alive. Bye.